flight. What is it that has captivated the imagination of people for centuries, for millennia, in fact? You can go back to mythology, Greek, Roman, all sorts of stories, and somewhere there is a character who has the ability to fly. You know, you can go back through human history. The Chinese were flying kites some three millennia ago. It comes to Europe in sort of the 1400s, in the 1500s. You've got Leonardo da Vinci, and he is just fascinated with birds and flight and movement. And then you come into the 1800s, and there's this incredible acceleration. We begin to see some of that in the footage. And then in 1903, Orville and Wilbur Wright, in Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, launch mankind into the new era, the era of flight. You know, they took this sort of biplane model and they attach an engine to it and decide we're gonna try and make this happen. And they take off and they fly 120 feet. That's some 40 meters at a top speed of about 50K, 35 mile an hour. But they have achieved this thing that has been the elusive dream of so many before them. And they land it and they race back and they go to the telegraph and they send this message to their sister Catherine. Now, if you know anything of telegraph, it's just short, concise sentences. So they send two sentences. We have flown 120 feet. Full stop. We'll be home for Christmas. Well, Catherine gets this message and she's just elated. She knows what the boys have been up to. And she goes to the local newspaper editor and she presents this to him in all expectation of his sense of celebration. And he glances at it and his response is this: how nice. The boys will be home for Christmas. Do you hear that? The boys will be home for Christmas. You can be so a part of something and yet miss the point of it. He had a moment to engage and celebrate what people have been yearning for forever, and he misses it. You know, Israel, God's people, had been waiting forever for Messiah, for the deliverer to come. It had been prophesied, the great prophet Isaiah had said that there's coming a time where the year of the Lord's favor would be declared. Jesus, in fact, in Luke chapter 4, picks up the scroll of Isaiah and he reads this portion and it says that the year of the Lord's favor is going to be declared. Behold, the blind will see, the captives will be liberated, those in darkness will come into light. He says it's now, it's happened. You know, the excitement begins to swell. The celebrations are here, the declaration is at hand. This is the time of the Lord. And then we find in Mark chapter 10 that there's this event, and it seems to be where people are beginning to really take a hold of who Jesus is, and this spontaneous celebration seems to erupt. It's one of my favorites, and I've invited one of my favorites, in fact my favorite son, to read this story from Mark chapter 10. I also have a favorite daughter and a favorite son-in-law and a favorite grandson, one of each right now. But this is my son Caleb, Mark chapter 10.
Hey, Good Life. Just going to be reading from the Message version today. This is Mark chapter 10, verse 46 to 52. They spent some time in Jericho. As Jesus was leaving town, trailed by his disciples and a parade of people, a blind beggar by the name of Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, was sitting alongside the road. When he heard that Jesus the Nazarene was passing by, he began to cry out, "Son of David, Jesus, mercy, have mercy on me." Many tried to hush him up, but he yelled all the louder, "Son of David, mercy, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped in his tracks. "Call him over." They called him. "It's your lucky day. Get up. He's calling you to come." Throwing off his coat, he was on his feet at once and came to Jesus. Jesus said, "What can I do for you?" The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "On your way," said Jesus, "your faith has saved and healed you." And in that very instant, he recovered his sight and followed Jesus down the road.
It's pretty great to be able to have this space that I can even have my son sitting on the other side of the world, engage this story with us and read it. I'm so grateful for that. But you see, here's this story, and there's so much about this story, I think, that captivates me. And when I first read it, it began to ask questions of me. And there's probably two main things I want to reference this morning. You know, Jesus is leaving Jericho, and it seems like this spontaneous sort of parade erupts. People are following him, and you know, you imagine there's this celebration of who he is, and as they're leaving, and they're leaving en masse, and a bit of a rabble if you picture it, there is this man sitting by the side of the road. His name's Bartimaeus. And he begins to cry out, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Can you picture it? There's this rabble, this crowd following Jesus and his disciples, and all of a sudden this man is just crying out, "Mercy, Son of David, have mercy on me." And what happens? Well, you would think with the fulfillment of Isaiah and Jesus saying, "Hey, that's what I'm here for. People in darkness, they'll see light. People who are captive will be liberated. People who are blind will see." And the people instead go, "Hey, shh, be quiet. Don't interrupt our Jesus parade with your blindness. There's something horribly wrong about it." And I remember reading it, and something in it troubled me. That his cries weren't heard over their celebration. You know, it made me ask this: do I hear the voices of people crying for liberty, for liberation from darkness, for that ability to see? Or do I just want him to be quiet and not interrupt my space? You see, Jesus, what I love about him, it's kind of like he goes, "Shh, does anyone else hear that voice? I hear a voice. It's a cry for mercy." And then the people actually turn to this guy and go, "Hey, it's your lucky day." It's not his lucky day. For goodness sake, it's what Jesus came for. Every day was meant to be that day, not just this fella's lucky day. To Jesus, it seems to me that an impassioned cry of yearning and desire mattered more to him than all of these declarations of celebration. Jesus knew who he was. He doesn't need us just going, "Oh, Jesus, you're so great. Oh, Jesus, we love you. Jesus, we follow you. Jesus, we serve you." Jesus knew who he was, but he knew what he was here for. And what he was here for mattered so deeply to him. And so he says, "Let's stop the parade. Bring him to me." And then he says to the man, what do you want?" And he says, "I just want to see." Don't you love that? "I just want to see." And Jesus just hears this request and he says, "Man, your faith, it's made you whole. I hear you and I answer you." And Jesus hears the heart cry. I wonder, have you ever seen yourself as either unworthy or felt like you've just been silenced? That somehow you've been sidelined or cut out? That you don't fit in the parade? I want you to know that if there's this cry in you that just says, "Son of David, have mercy on me," he hears you over all the noise. He hears you over all the adulation and celebration. He will stop any parade to turn to you and answer your cry for mercy. Jesus, hear me. Yeah, there's a song that I want to just take a moment in. It's a song that Craig wrote called "Known." it is a song that is probably one of my favorites as well, because it just says, it's in your presence I belong. I want to be there, and it's there that I am known. This blind man, it was in that presence of Jesus that he was known, and he found belonging, and he found liberty. And so as Craig and the team lead us through this, I'm just going to invite you to sit in this space and take it on board. Known.
'Cause in your mercy you came and made us your own. Now I can stand in your presence, and here I am known. In your mercy you came and made us your own. Now I can stand in your presence. All I'll ever want, you're all I'll ever need.
Thank you.
I'm so thankful to be known, to be accepted, to be restored. That's the story of my life. I know that Jesus heard my cry for mercy. And I didn't feel like I fit the parade, but I know that he heard me. That's the beauty of the love of God revealed in his Son. And the beauty is that we become that ongoing invitation to this world that we live in, to invite them to know restoration, the invitation of Christ. You know, last week we heard from Esther on what it means to actually take on board the things that Jesus said, that it's not enough for us to just hear and believe. It's to hear and to engage, to hear and to do. And that's what we become, is that ongoing gift of grace, of mercy, of restoration, of embrace, of welcome. And so it's easy for us to actually take on all the teaching but somehow miss the transformation. To take on all of the knowledge and miss the deep revelation, to actually enter into the celebration and find that the voices that are crying out around us are an interruption. Man, they never were to Jesus. Jesus actually engages so many interruptions. A dead child in a casket being paraded through the streets, he brings life. To the hungry on a hillside, he brings food. They weren't an interruption to his teaching. That was the opportunity for his declaration of the whole reason he had come. And Bartimaeus is not an interruption. Jesus isn't the one who goes, "Hey, Bartimaeus, can you be quiet? I'm reveling in the celebration of me." Jesus just goes, "Please stop and bring him to me. I want to be those hands and those feet that bring people to Jesus." And my hope is that we, as the church, in a period of time where people are longing for mercy, for engagement, for answers, for hope, that we become that. You know, Jesus is the one who really invites us to engage his heart. His heart. Not just educated knowledge. Jesus is the one who says, "If you've got ears, hear." Like, really hear what I'm saying. It's an invitation for us to be about him. So, I don't know what the week looks like ahead of you. I don't know where you're going to be walking, where you might be going, but maybe before you even leave home, just ask the Lord, "Hey, God, if there's any voice you want me to hear, any person you want me to engage, any action you want me to take, I want to do it. I don't just want to listen, I want to do. I don't just want to learn, I want to be." That's my prayer, that my faith becomes this living expression of Jesus. You know, many times Daniel has led us through the prayers of really a fairly ancient prayer, the prayer of Saint Francis. But it's this prayer I would like to close out today with. And we're going to bring it up on the screen, and the words are there, but I'm going to ask you just for a moment to look at the words before we just rattle them off, before we just do the parade of words, because they're deep. It's really asking for an engaged heart with humanity. It says this, Lord, would you make me an instrument of your peace? Where there is hatred, may I sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. You know, where there is sadness, may I bring joy. Oh, divine Master, may I not so much seek to be consoled as to console. May I not so much seek to be understood as to understand. May I not so much yearn to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, and it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born again. Amen and amen. May you find the will and the strength and the joy of walking in this space. God bless you and keep you and give you courage. Amen.